Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. It is time for the Tuesday edition of the Duff, Quarters and Skeeter Reddings podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Call Gamblers Helpline on 1800 858 858. Have with me in the studio our great producer, Josh Garlop, Mark Golden Tonsils Reddings, and the man with very small hands, Glenn Quartermain. We're going to run the ruler over round nine and all the issues that come out of it. But first, Skeet, on the ground reporter, as you are, you've just come back from West Coast training. What did you see?
Yeah, there's
today?
A bit to report. Only a half-hour window we get to shoot and have a look at what's happening with the session. And mind you, it's a Tuesday for a Sunday game, so they're not giving away too much. But what I can tell you that Liam Ryan, unless something goes untoward between now and the weekend he plays, he looked really zippy and sprinting up and down. So he's a given. Shannon Hearn was doing laps, but looking as if he's probably on track. The one that, and certainly from a visual point of view, was quite concerning. We have seen Oscar Allen with an arm brace on it training previously. That was sort of like a black sort of, small part around near his elbow and forearm. Today he's wearing like a brace from basically his shoulder through to his wrist. Now, again, it might be precautionary, but it's a watch moving forward whether he is fit enough to play on Sunday. Again, it could just be precautionary, but it looked quite serious.
So left arm, right arm?
The arm that he's had previously looked, I'm trying to work it out when I'm looking at the
vision. I think it's his right arm.
I think it's his right, yeah, right arm. He was throwing the ball to a teammate just well away from the main training session with just the left hand. So, look, that's just one to keep an eye on.
I reckon he's had that for a while. I reckon they were doing match simulation earlier in the year.
You're right.
And he was doing forward ruck training at that stage. And so he came into the centre bounce to do some ruck work. And he took two and then changed hands and then stopped doing it. So I reckon that's been with him for a while.
Well, if he's carrying something, he's going all right. And he's been pretty good.
He hits the deck pretty hard. Like he's had a couple of moments where you think, well, geez, he's landed awkwardly. But you're right. Put it this way. If he's a racehorse, you'd be a bit concerned about backing him on Saturday, but he just manages. They strap him up and he goes again. Yeah. So that's the gist of what's come out of Eagles training today. They should get at least two players back, but Oscar Allen, a question mark at this point.
All right. Now let's get to the really important issue. Hawthorn, witch's hats.
I agree.
My God.
They did. They were witches' hats. Actually, they weren't witches' hats. That's probably being a bit unfair to North.
They were 32 points up.
They were 32 points up.
Let's look at the bigger picture, Quarters, yes. In all seriousness. Yeah. Clarko's most likely going to stay. Yes, but what do they do with their list? Are they going to say this talk? Do they trade Chad Wingard out? Do they try and make a quick switch?
They're not going to trade Chad Wingard out.
Well,
to get him in there. They will just do what they did last year. They'll go to the draft. There's possibly, I'm not sure what currency there's going to be. Maybe you could look at someone like a Tim O'Brien, but they're not going to trade Mitchell. They're not going to trade Wingard. They'll go to the draft and they'll get early picks.
So there are people who I respect in footy. Mm-hmm. I won't name names, but there are people who I respect in footy who are saying Hawthorn are 5 years away. Do you believe that?
No, they could be, but I would think, it wasn't. You look at Clarkson joining Hawthorn. Now, it was a super draft that he was involved with, or before him even, but it was a pretty quick turnaround from a pretty low ebb. Like, they were getting beaten by 80 to 100 most weeks, and they turned it around pretty quickly. You can turn it around pretty quickly.
Agreed.
I don't look at the list and say, this is dire. I look at the list and say, this has got a long way to go, but I think there's stuff there. I think there's there's enough talent. I think Lewis and Kaczynski in the forward line, I think, show a bit. We do need an elite midfielder. I mean, we need another midfielder. We need a bit of pace.
Pace, yeah.
And I think if you look at the Hawthorn defence, all things going well next year.
So Cicely Will Day
come in. I think Denver Granger Barras, if they can get some footy into him, I don't expect great things for him for, you know, next year, but get some footy into him the latter part of this year. And he's been 4 to 6 weeks away for 4 to 6 weeks. So I think the back line has taken pretty good shape. They got some good run in there as well. So CJ and Impey. And so I think it's not as dire as people think. But at right now, they're the worst team in the comp.
And
that's proof. That's proven because they were beaten by the second worst team in the comp.
And there's not a lot of sympathy around for Hawthorn. As good as you've been as
we
a
don't
club
want
over
sympathy,
the past
mate.
15 years.
We're not after your sympathy.
No one is actually saying, oh, we need to get Hawthorn better in a hurry because guess what? You've had a fair lick at the ice cream for a long time.
Yeah, got to do it your own way. And that's what will happen. And that's what Hawthorn has done in the past. And I have full optimism. I'm very glass half full.
And you know what? You know how coaches always say, never as good, never as bad. You know, exactly. Never as good as you think it is, never as bad as it seems. What I loved about North Melbourne, and I wrote my column about him in the paper on Monday, is that, yes, Ben Cunnington was mighty. And I loved his reaction on the final.
He was good, wasn't he?
Like, it was almost like he was about to cry. He was so happy. But Davey Zuniak's third quarter I thought was fantastic. Jai Simpkins' performance over the four quarters was fantastic, and I thought Taron Thomas's last quarter was fantastic.
Well, they're all early picks, and they've been around for a couple of years, and so they should be. But you're right; they were instrumental. Cunnington, no one gives more to a footy team than he does. I want to ask, what's the Where's Wally on David Noble's magnetic board? What is that about? Have you seen it?
I have seen it, and I'm none the wiser.
He seems like he'd be a fun – he seems like he'd be a good coach to play under.
He would have to have a great sense of spirit through the first, almost 2 months of
he's
the season.
He's only been there – this is his first year, so it'd sort of be okay.
A bit like Matthew Nix last year where you're going through some tough times and people are saying you're not going to win a game for the season. So he's obviously on a long – talk about Hawthorn being on a five-year possible, at worst case scenario, rebuild. Well, this club – is a fair way off as well. They've got, you know, a journey that David Noble hopefully is prepared to be patient and, of course, keep drafting and keep bringing in the right talent. But, yeah, that was a good moment for footy on the weekend. No one wants to see a club completely on its knees.
It also shows the folly, doesn't it, of judging coaches purely on win-loss. Mm-hmm. They are better now than when he took over.
Totally.
Which is the whole thing about coaching. And I think Matthew Nix can claim that about Adelaide too.
Yeah. You
know, even though they've hit a tough spot in the draw and they've run out of wins. I think Adelaide are significantly more competitive now than they were.
Significantly. You look at this point last year, the first team they beat was Hawthorn too, but this time last year we were asking the question, will they win one? Because they looked a long way off.
All right, so let's get to Adelaide's game versus West Coast at Optus Stadium on Sunday. West Coast win by 5 goals. Jack Darling kicks those 5 goals in amazing. About 18 minutes in the second quarter. What did you make of the game, guys?
Well, if I'm going to watch West Coast at Optus and I'm in need of a pie and a beer, I'm not going to get it in the second quarter. I'm going to miss Jack Darling.
It can happen, can't it? You can go, I went to see a Glory game once. I haven't been to too many. I went out the back. Every time I went for a beer, which is every sort of 20, there was a goal scored. I missed every goal by being out the back. And if you went out for 10 minutes to go, maybe to the toilet, get some food and a drink, and Jack, everyone's come back, oh, Jack's having a bad day. No, he's kicked 5.
But at least there's a giant screen with replays. 1978 grand final, Hawthorn v North Melbourne. Phil the Snake Baker took two of the most memorable grand final hangs. I was out getting a hot dog both times. I missed it. So
that could happen at the MCG back in those days too, by the way. They were very Subi Yakko Ovalish facilities back at the MCG in those days.
As Adam Simpson said, it wasn't a flawless performance by any means. In fact, it was a moderate effort, really, when you look at what they did through the course of the game. But they got that 5-goal advantage at the end, and they had to do what they had to do. And there are going to be weeks like that. And we've seen that with Geelong in a bit of a comparison. They've just managed to bank the win, and there's some upside for West Coast, massive upside.
Well, they got McGovern and Barras back last week. They're 6-3. They're well in contact with the four. They're not playing anywhere near their capabilities at the moment, but they're in contact. And with troops coming back this week. So it's definitely, there's plenty of room for improvement, but you can see that improvement coming. For me, the key is going to be Elliot Yeo, whether they can push in and do anything in that top four.
He wasn't doing anything at training today, mind you, either.
I don't like them with that many talls. West Coast. I think a better team with that balance, I reckon West Coast is in trouble in that game. If they've got a better opponent than that, to me, that was the balance that got them against St Kilda, and they ran out of wheels after half time, and St Kilda just ran right over the top of them. And I know West Coast had some absences in that game, but so did St Kilda. Paddy Ryder wasn't playing at that point for St Kilda, and Paddy Ryder's a big in for St Kilda. So just to me, there was a moment in the third quarter where I think the Crows kicked three of the four goals, first four goals after halftime, and they got to within three kicks. And I just thought to myself, jeepers, they get the next one and it gets inside two kicks and they just get a sniff. Luckily, the whole thing about having a potent forward line is that you can score quickly, and West Coast forwards responded. They got the goals they needed to blow the game out again, and then Adelaide probably that mental elastic band that keeps a team in touch, it was broken, and Adelaide were always just playing, you know, to be respectable after that. But I don't like – I think they have to make a hard call on one tall. And
oh, is it?
Well, I don't like saying it because I love him in attack, but I wonder whether Oscar Allen has to eventually go back to being the forward ruck for now, and maybe – until Bailey Williams or Nathan Vardy has more impact than they're having on the game at the moment, that maybe that they're the ones that miss out.
And the issue is quarters. I'm not sure, and Duff talks about having the wheels. I don't think, obviously, with Yo and Shuey out of the mix, they don't have the depth in their midfield to maybe cover those deficiencies at the moment.
No, here's another one. When we get Shuey back and Yo back, how does Tim Kelly go? So it's an interesting point worth noting, because he seemed a bit lost at times when they did have that midfield depth out there. So I hope, because he's playing really well at the moment, so I hope that form is not affected when he becomes one of many.
When it comes to midfields, more is not necessarily better. And in fact, Adam Simpson consciously made a choice in 2018 to go with one less midfielder and one more genuine forward, which Willie Rioli enabled them to do. It meant Dom Sheed actually missed out on their best 22 for significant chunks of that season. And then, of course, Andrew Gaff had the brain fade in the derby against Fremantle and gets suspended, and then Sheed comes back in. But we talk about the deep midfields. Does a deeper midfield actually translate to on-field success?
It does for the Western Bulldogs.
I was thinking the same thing.
Not yet, it hasn't.
No, at this point it has.
And Melbourne's midfield, let's be honest, has been terrific all season. I think there are more cases that a big depth of midfield is advantageous than not advantageous. I just think in the modern game, if you can bat that deep, I think it gives you a better chance.
I think you need to bat deep in September-October too, because that's when the attrition comes in. And you have a few injuries, and you've got to call on those troops. So I think I go for midfield depth every time. The issue is whether you can fit them all in on a given day, because it can create an imbalance.
And I wonder whether West Coast's decision was based on personnel. They had elite forwards with Kennedy and Darling. Obviously, Allen wasn't quite on the scene yet. They had elite small forward talent with Cripps, Ryan, and obviously Willie Rioli. So they maybe thought, this is our one wood. Let's play it and maximise it. So there may be an element of that as well. Dogs v Port. Dogs get the win. Port, I thought, wet the bed a bit again, as they can.
I'm going to give them a little bit of an out. I think their outs were significant, particularly Lysette and Butters. Butters gives them that something, doesn't he, mid-forward.
Yeah, so class. He's a class player.
That's a slab. My phone just went off. Sorry, boys. that mid-forward, he is class, and I think they really missed him. But the Dogs were really – I mean, I love the shape of their forward line.
Yeah, let's pay credit to them.
Aaron Norton's really taken another step, I think, in his development this year, not four goals at the weekend. But it's not just the goals. It's the way the forward line shapes around him, and I love the way he attacks the footy. So there's a lot to like about my pre-season premiership prediction.
And they beat my pre-season premiership prediction in Port Adelaide. And I'm not going to jump off with that performance by any means, Duff. I think what we do see is this Western Bulldogs with the Bont going so well, McRae having an amazing season.
By the way, Libba's gone all right this year too. And we talk about midfield depth.
Out of contract, I think, still hasn't been quite sorted yet on that front. So they've got a bit of work to do. But
I hope he doesn't go anywhere.
No, the romance of him staying is fantastic. But no, I think the Western Bulldogs deserve really good a lot of credit for what they did at the Adelaide Oval. And where are they? Sitting second. They're in pretty good shape. They're in really good
shape. It's really interesting. Look, the form teams are Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs. You've got West Coast sort of looming in the background, waiting for the cavalry to arrive.
Geelong's third.
Geelong, you've done nothing wrong.
Oh, by the way, I'm back on.
Of course you are.
I tell you what, you almost wouldn't have been. Because if not for some, what was it, 517 from St Kilda.
Well, 09.
That's just, and I noted the comment you made in your column. Brett Ratton's complaining about tackles. Just convert a few and it might be a little bit different.
Well, I think five might have been the first five should have been kicked.
Yep.
I think Membry missed two. I reckon Max King missed two and Rowan Marshall missed one.
Did you feel a bit?
They all should have been kicked.
Sorry for King when you saw him. He missed one. He's gone to the bench and just as he's gone, there's a Bulldog score at the other end almost immediately and you just see him sitting on the bench and you just felt a bit for him. I really did. But you know what? St Kilda, Geelong, you've got to love. I mean, that was just they could have easily lost that game. I think Sydney for me, I'm not sure where I'm at with Sydney. I love the weight, the season they've had, but I'm not sure if I put them in the bracket with the others. Richmond's the really interesting one. So again, they're winning games when they have to, but geez, it's taken some effort. It's taking some effort. So I look at Richmond and I wonder whether we're ready to say that teams have gone past them.
Oh, no, I don't. I looked at that win on the weekend and that to me was absolute proof that Richmond are still in it up to their eyeballs.
And look at the outs they had and what's to come back in.
Midfield. They played without a midfield.
They just have to be within shouting distance. And let's be honest, they're one team that could possibly cause some damage outside the top four.
I will say, though, the team they played had quite a few outs as well, and so there's a little bit of attrition in game. So, I mean, that played a big part in it. I agree with you. You write Richmond off at your peril. I'm just looking at them and thinking, like, they're showing the signs of a team that's won three, and I've seen it.
A bit like the Richmond Lions when...
Hawthorn,
those teams, I tend to agree with you, Quarters. Now, we might be proven totally incorrect on Friday night if they go up to the Gabba and defeat the team that I think is a real genuine chance
them
now,
yet.
The Brisbane Lions.
You've got to say they're certainly a contender.
They are, but they only beat Gold Coast. Once a month, Gold Coast just turns their toes up.
Once a month? Geez, I'm going to say a couple of times a month. I'm disappointed in Gold Coast.
But forget their opposition. I think Brisbane, I mean, they've beaten Port Adelaide, albeit the Gabba. I just think if you look at what they've done bar round one, they haven't done a lot wrong, the Brisbane Lions.
No, I did a story with Harris Andrews and he said they just rolled out there in round one. They made some assumptions and they found out the hard way how tough a competition
it's amazing you can go out there at this level and make assumptions in round one.
Well, what they call assumptions are you're 3% off.
Yep.
Yeah. And that gets you.
3% will get you every time. And 1% gets you most weeks.
Yeah, so I think that's what he meant. He basically meant we were a bit off, you know, we basically thought home game, you know, we're playing a team that didn't play finals last year, therefore we go out, we do what we've got to do, we win. Doesn't happen that way in the AFL. Jesse Hogan kicked 4 in a quarter for GWS.
Mm.
Ran out of puff a bit. Looks, I don't know, maybe it's the different jumper. Looks a little large.
Well, how many times did he kick 4 goals for the Dockers in consecutive weeks? We had obviously a calf injury, but how often did he kick 4 goals?
No, he didn't. He kicked 3 against GWS once, and he had a couple of big games, I reckon, where he was very important to them, kicked 2 and had a lot of goal assists. I think there was one at the MCG when they caused an upset. They might have beaten Collingwood, I reckon, at the MCG, caused an upset.
I loved his game, his effort at the weekend. I think there's no tank there. There's been no continuity. Even this game, he came back from a week off where he wouldn't have been able to do much. So I think it's hard to just come back at that level and play 4 quarters. And if you're going to kick 4 and a quarter, you've done your job. So far,
it's a win for the Giants.
It is.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely no question. What did they give away for Jesse?
Set of steak knives.
Not a lot.
There you go.
Not a lot. But by the same token, nobody thought that Fremantle should have kept him. So it was...
He had to go. Yep. Like, Fremantle's players had gotten to a point where they just believed that all Jesse was a distraction.
Mm.
And the reality is, that's not far from the truth.
He was.
And you know what? We can talk about mental health and all those things, but Jesse fell so far short of the required professional standard when he was at Fremantle. I don't blame them at all for letting him go.
So being a last chance saloon, and let's call it that, it certainly is for him. He's not going to another fourth club, but maybe the penny has dropped to an extent, but also maybe this is the best fit for him.
Sydney, no one knows him. Not really an AFL heartland by any stretch of the imagination. The scrutiny is minimal, so it might be that type of fit.
And you know what? If we get the best footy out of him, I'm wrapped because I want to see the best footy out of Jesse Hogan.
Yeah, well, he's a talent, isn't he? And he's been through a lot in his life. And I think it's easy to forget that. I think he has been through a lot in his life. But having said that, if you want to play professional footy, you do have to have some professionalism about you, and turning up to training in an unfit state to train, which he did the week before his first game at Fremantle, that's a fair way short of the mark.
Yes.
Now, so the Giants play West Coast next week at Giants Stadium. Toby Green got crashed into by Dylan Graham. He's gone.
Yep.
They may get Nick Haynes back.
And who else? Perryman, I think, is very doubtful, if not
going. Perryman's done a hammy. Yeah, he's gone.
He's out. So there's two more outs added to a long list of outs they've already got. Mm. So it gets harder and harder every week for the Giants. I've actually been pretty impressed with him this year, in spite of what they've been going through.
Can they make the eight? I mean, they can, obviously, does this eight change from what we're looking at right now? Is there, who drops out then for them?
History says it doesn't, but there is occasionally one.
Sydney most likely, I would say.
See, I think Sydney comes to Perth to play Fremantle this week. I'm tipping Fremantle. Sydney v Fremantle in Perth.
You know what's interesting about that? Buddy's flying. They're saying Buddy's flying. I would have thought Optus is just a put a line through it for Buddy.
Well, having said that, I remember going to watch him play against the Eagles in round one.
Yes.
Was it 2018?
But that's why.
Kick seven, and then off the back of that, he had some issues, didn't he?
Foot stress fractures related to the surface. Now, I know other people dispute that, but they've got that bee in their bonnet. So I'm surprised he's flying to play. I thought they would have rested him this week.
You'd like to think that the issues with the surface have been addressed. I mean, I remember that playing surface at that time, and it was like synthetic turf rolled over concrete.
Mate, I played a game of touch rugby on it. I can confirm that.
It was very hard. And Sydney were here last year. They were in a hub here last year, so they know the surface. So you would think they're making an informed decision.
So, Duff, who's dropping out if the Giants are able to make it? And, I tend to agree. Outside of that top eight, they're the team that, to me, look as if they've got some momentum and some form, and obviously they've got the quality to get into the eight. Who misses out there?
Sydney's the only team I can see in there.
And they're two games inside
Richmond,
as we speak.
No, West Coast no, Port no, Brisbane no, Geelong no, Dogs no, and Melbourne no. So Sydney, I'm not saying they're missing, but they're the most likely of those.
Yeah,
I would say.
And I'm not saying the Giants are going to make it, but I think the Giants are a chance. The thing about the Giants that has impressed me now is that, one, I can see what they're trying to do, which I couldn't last year. And two, I just get the feeling the penny's dropped a little bit with their players, that we've got a lot of talent here, even with all the players that are left, and we're wasting that talent. We are only scratching the surface of what we can do.
What a pity that penny didn't drop 2 years ago.
Well, they did make a grand final 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But post that, I mean, the last 2 years I think have been a wasteland for them.
You know why I can't write Richmond off? Because what they did in the third quarter, and they did it 2 weeks ago against the Dogs as well, Richmond, I believe, are the best team in the AFL without the ball. When the other team has got the ball, Richmond does things better than any other team. David King, the Fox footy analyst, he's convinced that's what wins flags. Well, he's been right 75% of the time.
Is Melbourne not doing that now?
I think Melbourne are doing more of it, but Richmond takes teams to a place where they can't live. Well, they did it to GWS again on the weekend.
I know, I'm not saying they're not, because you write them off at your peril, but I'm just not sure I'm seeing a little bit of vulnerability about Richmond.
No, you're 100% right.
And not quarters. Just with the outs they've got.
No, you're right. I think it is there's peaks and troughs in not just their quarters,
more
but there's their matches. So, again, just an indication that they've been to the mountain a few times. They've still got their best, as we know, still as good as anyone, if not the best in the competition. But there is a hint of vulnerability. And the longer they keep just scratching around and finish sixth, seventh, eighth, or just unable to make the top four, it gets tougher and tougher. Having said that, if they did finish fourth or fifth
Melbourne v Richmond
MCG
first up would be awesome.
At the MCG.
Mind you, when they beat Brisbane by 8 goals on Friday night, we'll be...
They won't be beating Brisbane by 8 goals.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay, so let's go on. For Freo fans who are wondering when we're going to start talking about them, we're going to get to you in our
Biggie Juicy topic
of the week.
Pinched asses. Oh.
There he is.
Jordan DeGoey pinches Isaac Quayner on the bum in the pre-match address. This is what we're talking about.
We are. I'll tell you what. could not have lived in that. None of us could have.
And, it, you know, like we're going to spend minimal time on this subject, because it's been cleared by the AFL. As Duff pointed out, it's been cleared by the player who was allegedly
So this is the key. Infringed. Like when Richmond did it in their post-match a couple of years ago, the problem for them was that I think it was Marby Achol, and Marby Achol was clearly uncomfortable with what was happening. And plus, he was being tapped on his genitals.
So that wasn't a arse pinch, that was the meat and two veg.
thank you, Glenn. Let's just lift it. Lift it a notch.
But it persisted, didn't it? He was clearly uncomfortable, whereas Isaac, well, again, we can't read minds, but he's clearly told the club, the AFL, he had no issue with it. So off the back of that, case closed. But as the AFL said, just watch what you do, lads, in those situations.
And Jordan DeGoey, like you did suggest that last week that Willie Rioli perhaps did not have a Hadron Collider in his backyard. Mm-hmm. Jordan DeGoey would not know what a Hadron Collider was. Okay. He's not the sharpest tool in the shed, Jordan DeGoey. But
not
having
guilty.
Said that,
before we get on to Freo.
Skeet's got an idea in the paper today. I think we should talk about it.
It's a good column, mate.
Well, it's just an idea. Having watched the NRL have Magic Round, which was the second time that they've had that, essentially what they do is they get all 16 NRL clubs to Brisbane. The state government up there, very proactive, getting 8 matches played over the course of 3 days, and it becomes like a footy festival. Now, last year with the AFL Hub, there was talk, why don't we do this on a more regular basis, a footy festival, a hub where we get all the clubs together and make it a celebration. Well, that probably isn't going to come to pass just through the natural existence of our season because we're back to normality. Mm. But I just thought, would it be worth exploring from a state government, from the AFL? I'm talking parochially. You can't have it in Melbourne.
No.
Because
it would have to go outside.
Melbourne will say you can.
Yeah, of course they will. But it makes no sense. Perth or Adelaide, but we're in Perth. So let's say Perth. We potentially, and it's 9 games, or if 9 games, not 9 games, and maybe do it during the bye with these 5 games. Is there an appetite to have, like we did last year, Collingwood playing Geelong on a Thursday night, I think it was. We saw Carlton and Hawthorn. Mm. I just love going to Optus Stadium to watch matches involving non-WA teams. Just the change of the fan behaviour, the diversity, I loved it. In essence, I've just said in the paper that perhaps we can do a It might be a Wednesday night, a Thursday night, a Friday night. Given that we've got 9 games, you can't fit them into the same window that we do for the NRL. And then, of course, you've got to try and get 3 games in on a Saturday and Sunday. Unlikely, but I can tell you now, they got 20,000 tourists up to Brisbane last weekend. It generated, I think, $20 million in 2019 for the economy. It might not work, but let's explore. Because in WA, we don't get any Friday night matches. We get one Thursday game coming up against Richmond. They are few and far between where we can showcase our stadium, our great city. Don't know.
I love it. I think it would be interesting to see the appetite from the other clubs and the AFL towards Perth. You know, just on that magic round at Suncorp Stadium, I've never been to Suncorp, have you?
No, I haven't.
Apparently it's a sensational place to watch rectangular sport.
Yep.
But a mate of mine who lives on the Gold Coast, he's from Sydney originally, he was posting all weekend. So him and his mates have camped down up in Brisbane.
Yep.
And they've gone to everything. They've gone to the lot, and every Facebook post was another beer and another meal and another this and another, and they loved it. And people engage with it like that. And imagine, I would love to see the people come from interstate. I always thought during last year's the Gabba Grand Final, and I know there were political reasons too, but what a great precinct we have here. It lit up, it's beautiful at night, and I would love to see it tested in that manner.
Yeah, and we need the government to get behind it. It's obviously an expensive exercise.
Hang on a minute, back up. what did you say?
Well, the government, like they have in Queensland, have been so proactive with the grand final.
Which government's that?
We're talking about the state WA government.
Doctor No.
Well, I tend to think it's the health officer that's Doctor No, but we're talking COVID here. We're digressing, which you're alluding to, Duff. Mine, from a principal point of view, I think the government would have to play some role, unless the AFL is going to bankroll it. There's a cost associated, massive cost.
Absolutely.
But why not think outside the square?
I like the idea. our football-friendly state government, call me crazy. I love the idea, Skeet. I think it was a great idea. I think it was a great column. But
no. Well, we will just sit here, and I'm telling you, and Fremantle, and you're a Fremantle sympathiser, Duff, will keep getting a Sunday afternoon game. Every time slot that is adverse to supporters and getting the national spotlight. Fremantle will keep owning, and West Coast might get it the odd Friday night game, occasionally a Thursday, but let's be honest, we are left out very much in the lurch when it comes to high-profile matches.
I agree with that, and this will segue nicely into the biggie juice, juicy topic of the week, but I reckon our club should be going for Saturday night. They should just acknowledge they're going to get the odd token Friday night. Like, Fremantle won't get them until they're in the eight. And West Coast, even though they're a big club with a big following, they'll only get them every now and again. Saturday night is the perfect night to play games at Optus Stadium. You can get people on and off the precinct very easily. I think that's the way to go.
And you think it's easier for people coming up from the country as well?
Absolutely.
Obviously on a Saturday.
Yeah,
they Friday travel. Nights I'd love, but it's just hard
and
to finish.
And the Perth time, so it's 6:10 bounce down, which obviously accommodates Victoria essentially. The nightmare associated, and we work in the industry, so we have an easier access to get to the ground or certainly leave work earlier. The difficulties of having Friday night games here, the time zone doesn't help. But we still find people got there. 54,000 got there for the Eagles and Collingwood a month ago, April 16. So we know they can do it. It's not easy, but there's an absolute appetite for big time footy here.
All right, let's get on to the biggie juice, juicy topic of the week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
It was all a dream. Juicy topic of the week.
Nice to have Barry White along too, as usual.
I'm going to hand over to Josh here because the reason why we chose this one as the juicy topic of the week, there's a lot of angst from Fremantle fans at the moment about their performance, obviously. They let one slide against Essendon at the weekend. It meant that instead of being 5-4 and in touch with the eight, they're 4-5 and starting to lose touch. Josh, talk us through some of the feedback.
Yeah, we thought we'd just change up a little bit of the structure this week to highlight some of your emails. We had a lot of emails about Fremantle, and we'll get to some more in the actual mailbag section. But I thought this email from Brian Goh in Perth basically just summed it up a bit better of a lot of the emails we're getting. This one says, last year, just wondering if you think Fremantle are tanking. If not, then how long does JL have before putting this team in the right direction, or otherwise is his job in jeopardy? Last year, Fremantle showed a buy-in, a level of enthusiasm and skill improvement that we haven't seen in years. However, we are, in my opinion, back to the same team that they were in 2019, with a very long injury list, poor player and team development, and a lack of effort and skill that makes it hard to turn up to work on Mondays. Interested to hear what the Brains Trust think. I added the Brains Trust.
I can tell you now, they're not tanking. That's off the table completely. Lack of skill, could I easily argue that. Mm. Lack of effort, I don't think so. I can totally understand the frustration of Fremantle supporters at the moment, given what they had last year. You know, the biggest thing, and I know it's an easy thing, because every club's got an injury list, they need to somehow get their squad together. And I don't know how they're going to do that. They've changed their head of fitness and conditioning. Nothing has changed on the injury front now. I don't know.
Except aren't they more impact injuries this year? Is that right? Is that a fair assessment? So they've been more unlucky, if that makes any sense, because they're not. It's not necessarily a strength and conditioning issue. It's an impact injury situation.
So to me, I sit down at the start of every year and I put clubs in brackets, and then they're in a 16 bracket. So I look at West Coast, I go 1-6, and they're in that bracket with Geelong, with Richmond, with the Dogs, with Brisbane, and I can't remember who else I had in there, but there would have been someone else in there. Fremantle 7-12. Now, that means they can tumble into the bottom end of the eight if everyone's fit and available and all their good players are playing in good nick and they win a couple of close games. Now, clearly, they haven't had a good run with injury. But I look at what Fremantle fans, and let's face it, this has started since the Derby. So this is what I would call an accumulation of grief. So after round eight, if you'd have said to me, as a person who sympathises with Fremantle, that they were going to be 4-4 with the injuries they've had, if you'd have given me that in February, I would have jumped the table and signed the paper. The problem for them was they lost their 11th straight derby. And so then suddenly there's been this angst come. And then on the weekend, they lost one that, watching the game, we thought they should have won. But just a reminder, because there's this weird phenomenon that happens with Fremantle where people get optimistic and then they get pessimistic. It's like this endless pendulum where it swings backwards and forwards. We've got 24 people in our tipping panel. 18 of them tipped Essendon. I tipped Essendon just, and Essendon just won. Fremantle should have won. Poor kicking at goal cost them that game. Like, forget everything else. Poor kicking at goal cost Fremantle that game. They were inside 50 enough to win that game. They had enough shots on goal to win that game. I think Matt Taberner kicks 4-3 and one out of bounds on the full. I think David Mundy and Lockie Schultz shank two and don't even make the distance. So this is like their 8-13 was like the 2013 grand final.
Actually, if it wasn't a few weeks back when the inaccuracy was there, but they were winning a couple, you did warn
that
this will cost them games, and now it has.
They've kicked 117 points this season. Now, obviously, we talk of Nat Fyfe with 215, et cetera. The upside to that philosophy, Duff, is that, albeit more so at home, they are kicking scores. They've kicked 100 points here, certainly they have had a lot of looks that previously thinking, well, the Dockers, if they kick 10 goals, they'll be doing well. They're kicking 80, 90, 100 points thereabouts at Optus Stadium quite regularly this season. My question more so to the respondent is the quality they've beaten. Adelaide was a meritorious win, but they're going to be bottom four, I suspect. North Melbourne, we know that.
Hawthorn.
In the case, Hawthorn. And the fourth one was the Giants, who were terrible here. So I just have to temper what we say about there's a level of positivity and negativity, as you said. But unfortunately, the better teams, and as you suggested, they're a 7th to 12th side. And they could be a 7th side if they win a match against Essendon at Marvel Stadium. If they knock over Sydney on the weekend, they suddenly are back in the reckoning. But I still think there's some major positives with regards to the scoring, which was a big element coming into Justin Longyear's tenure.
So you guys all agree that even if at the end of the year they're still in that, 9 to 13 bracket, you still would overall see it as potentially the right trajectory.
I think Justin Longmuir, in terms of his coaching, I think any first-year coach last year, I think it's almost an outlier. How difficult would it have been as a first-year coach, Matthew Nix was another, to get hold of a group and you're not allowed to get hold of a group? It just would have been really difficult. So I think it's been a really tough initiation for Justin Longmuir. I think to a certain point, he's moulding his team now. He's inherited the situation. So I think it was the right choice still.
I'm happy with most of what Justin Longmuir is doing. There are two things I question. The first thing is Michael Walters. I want Michael Walters getting the ball 20 times and kicking two goals. I don't want to hear the coach telling us that he's playing a selfless role. Michael, if Michael Walters is not getting the ball 20 times and kicking two goals, Michael Walters is either out of form or you're using him in the wrong way.
So he looked better when he was on the ball at the weekend.
I think he needs to go into the middle, and I think he needs to go forward from the middle. Obviously, Fife's kicking there's a Ron Barassi saying, and you're going to have to excuse my friend. Are we allowed to say, as long as it's not the F word or?
I believe you do whatever you want.
All right. So Ron Barassi had a saying, practice makes perfect is bullshit. Perfect practice makes perfect. I've got no doubt that Nathan Fyfe has practiced his backside off with his kicking for goal. But if you're doing the wrong thing, if there is a technical flaw in your kicking, you are never going to get better. He needs to drill down. He needs to go out on the track with David Mundy and say, what do you do to make sure you kick the ball well?
By the way, speaking of kicking well, Chera, not a bad comeback. Little bit of a stint in the sidelines and come back. Geez, he uses the ball well.
Well, he's another one. This is what you got to do. You got to work out. I think Nathan Fyfe has some technical flaws with his kicking. I think his ball drops too high, and that means that there is a margin for error there, and it means he has two misses. He'll slide the one right, which he's been doing a bit last two games, or he'll yank the one left, which he used to do a little bit in the past. So to me, that's just working on his craft. But the one I'm really hot on? Rory Lobb. The next Rory Lobb contract will not be pruned with scissors. It will be pruned with a lawnmower. Seriously. He gets a game because he's 207 centimetres tall. Every now and again you think he can take a mark, which he nearly did. I think the umpire's entitled to either pay that one or not pay it, because given he started to lose control of it on the way down.
That was a mark.
Well, okay, I'm happy for it to be paid, but I'm also not that hot on it not being paid, because you could see him starting to lose control of it on the way down.
He's a nearly player, isn't he?
He just doesn't do enough. And I suspect he's happy with what he's doing. And like I said with Michael Walters, 20-2, thank you very much. And that's where I want him with the ball in his hands that often, and I want him around goals that often. Rory Lobb, if you're not kicking to a game with four shots on goal, and if you are getting outmarked once, like the key stat with Rory Lobb should be how many times did a defender take a mark with you in the vicinity? And that figure every game should be zero.
Because his contested marking has been rock solid.
He gets outmarked too often, quarters. Mm. It's not how many he takes. It's like tackles, you know. It's not how many tackles you stick. It's how many you miss. And with Rory, no defender should take a mark with him in the vicinity. Because 207 centimetres just doesn't get outmarked. Doesn't get outmarked. He doesn't go on the ball that often. He should be a two-goal-a-game forward.
Yeah, so hopefully that answers part of the question. And look, I still think that the Dockers are on the improvement. I think we'll see on Saturday night. I think they can beat Sydney as well for what it's worth. Yeah. Wet conditions. I just think they're not that far off. And the frustration comes because you get those moments leading into the derby where you think, okay, we've got the chance to build and finally beat this other mob. You don't, and then you travel away to play the Lions, always going to lose that match in my mind. Mm. And the Bombers, a 50-50 game, had chances. But again, kicking efficiency in front of goal particularly let you down.
There has been a cascade of grief, an endless cascade of grief since the Derby. And the whole tone about Justin Long. Justin Longmuir is not in any trouble this year. There will be expectation next year. So next year, they need to get it right. They need to get their strength and conditioning right. They need to get their best 22 out there more often, and they need some progress from players.
So we need to see Fremantle on the back end of that eight next year. That's what we're saying.
Almost making it, I would have thought.
That's what I'm saying. No, they need to play finals.
So I'm saying they're playing. They're squeezing into the eight next year,
I think,
if not higher.
I think a lot of us had hopes they could get there this year. But
a lot of people picked them to play finals this year in the West.
But a lot of injuries, you know, they've – but again – you need your best players at their best. And don't forget, David Mundy won't be there next year.
You don't think so?
No. And don't do the contract, please. Do not do the contract.
Hang on, a month ago.
I know what you're saying.
A month ago, you would have been absolutely howled down if you'd said.
Are there players who are just different? I'm putting Burgoyne in this basket. Are there just players? Mundy is just so good. I know the point you're making. Don't give him the contract next year. But
no, not yet. I'm saying wait and see. I don't think
he can do it yet.
I don't think he'll be there this year. I'm saying wait and see how he's travelling at the end of the
year. You're concerned that he's the fatigue and the length of the year might just play a factor at the back end?
It's not just that. So look at the last three games and how Fremantle have been able to defend. And actually take Essendon out of it because Fremantle should have won that game.
Mm.
Yeah, Fremantle had enough of the ball inside attacking 50. They had enough scoring opportunity. They should have won that game. But against Brisbane and West Coast, what happened? They couldn't get to them. They couldn't defend as a team. And it was one of the reasons why Caleb Sarong went to Zach Merritt. They knew because they're not defending well as a team, they had to take something away from the opposition midfield. David Mundy's 35 years old. This is not a slight on David. David is wonderful with the ball in his hands. If you can get it to him 25 to 30 times a game, good things will happen. But good things won't happen when a good opponent has got the ball. He's 35. Nathan Fyfe is a C-ball, get-ball midfielder. So he doesn't defend that well either. Andy Brayshaw was their best defensive midfielder. He's playing more offensively this year. So he's not defending as effectively as he did previously either. Sarong, I like the role they allocated to Sarong at the weekend, but as a team with a C-ball, get-ball captain and a 35-year-old and a 19-year-old in there, their midfield isn't defending that well.
But Duff, also, are there players, you talk about Mundy's future, and it's a perfectly valid point, but, you know, are there guys underneath the Luke Valentis, guys that we're waiting for midfielders who've been drafted to come through and emerge? It just doesn't seem they have that readily available.
Well, we'd like to know how good Valenti is. Like, one of the reasons I wrote the column I wrote in Saturday's paper about the draft age being too young, we've barely seen Luke Valenti play. Mm. I mean, how do we know what he is?
But they know how good he is. If he was good enough, he'd be playing AFL footy now, surely.
He hasn't been fit. Quarters. He started playing. He's missed so much footy with groin and hip and all manner of injuries that he actually started playing this year in the Peel 2s just to get match practice.
Which goes back to my original point about the injuries. And again, not laying the blame at any. They just need to get a list together.
They do.
And I think that's – and until you get that together, and until you get continuity, like how good's Griffin Lowe going to be? Is he going to be a just key defender, or is he going to be like Josh Gibson or someone like that? Until he gets continuity, you just don't know. And they've got a lot of players in that bracket. Sam Sturt's going to start his fourth season on the list, having barely played in the first three. Hayden Young's going to start his third season, having barely played in the first two. They've got too many guys injured for too long, and that needs to change. But you're right, Quarters. You mentioned about the impact injuries. Like in the past, they've had a lot of soft tissue stuff. And more recently, it's been syndesmosis, and it's been, Rory Lobb's knee, and, different ones. Alex Pierce's broken legs, Joel Hamling's rolled ankle. It's been all these things that they really can't do a lot about. You've just got to kind of go, okay, we're having a bad run. We need to get through it. But Nathan Fyfe needs to fix his kicking, because it was going to cost them a game. Nathan's field kicking was pretty ordinary on the weekend.
38%, wasn't it, or thereabouts?
But I do think, they're building a brand. Like what's Richmond's great strength? It's a brand, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a brand. Yeah, they've got great players, but it's a brand.
And bear in mind, just very quickly, go back 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, this Richmond juggernaut, no one could have foreseen this, happened over the past few years. No one.
I would even suggest that they had a soft edge to them.
Yeah.
So certainly would not say that now.
And when Peggy O'Neill and Brendan Gale come out and say, we want to win 3 flags in the next 5 years or whatever it was, we laughed at them. And now they're smiling.
Yeah. I think you need a little bit of luck too. It's very smart management, but you do need a little bit of luck along the way. You need a perfect confluence of everything going right that you set in motion, and they've certainly had that.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Hello,
Josh's
Newman.
Mailbag.
Oh, time is all out, guys. Very good, strong discussion then about Fremantle. Thank you for the email, Brian Go, I believe. Now, we're running out of time, guys. We're trying to do 4 minutes or 4 or 5 minutes of questions. Just a quick one. I had this thought the other week, but I thought it was a bit silly to bring up, but I will bring it up now, that Martin from East Vic Park has emailed in. Great show, guys. Hi, Josh. With a swath of injuries this season, is it possible for an AFL club that AFL club could not have enough fit players to have a full 22 on the weekend? And in what happens when that happens?
I love that question because nobody knows. Why? What happens?
There'd be a bit of mad scrambling. There'd be a rule invoked overnight, and there would be some. There'd be like a mini mid-season draft. You would. There'd be top up players come in. AFL would never allow that to happen.
So should an AFL club have a supplementary list of players, like let's say 10 players they pay $10,000 each a year to, and they are, in case of emergency, break glass?
Are we talking about hypothetically VFL players, you're saying?
Any like Waffle, Sandfall, VFL.
Have we ever become close to this?
I would have thought so.
I think West Coast had 5 players in the Waffle a couple of weeks ago because they took a few with them. This was for the Hawthorn trip. This is when they copped the hammering from East Fremantle, which prompted a bit of angst around the place as it was as well. And they actually rang, West Coast actually rang clubs for top-up players for that game. So it's happened in the Waffle.
And so without going down another path, are we supportive of the Eagles being able to expand who they can bring into their group at Waffle level? Because clearly the likes are really impressed with what the Eagles dished up, and those that are running the football department there are suggesting that
things will even out, though, Skeet. They will even out once a few Eagles, a few injured Eagles go back, things will even out a bit. I've got that belief.
My view, though, is that it does the Waffle no good to have games like that East Fremantle or West Coast game. And to me, my ideal scenario for both West Coast and Peel is that they're either just in or just out of finals. I don't really want them up the top end.
So it's hard to manufacture, though. Peel wins flags.
Yeah. Well, if you're in the comp, you can't manufacture it. You're in the comp, you're chance to win the flag.
Well, that's where
if you're doing the rules, that should be the outcome you're looking for when you're doing the rules.
Well, that's where they've got it wrong if you're doing that scenario for when Peel won those flags with that alignment with the Dockers. And the Waffle clubs and those associated with hated it. And now they have got the balance more skewed in that sort of Peel mid-range team, West Coast, no good. You want West Coast, like they did a year or two ago, challenging for the finals.
I reckon one more marquee player. Let's do that next year. Let's see how that goes. Let's see what their injuries are and then maybe tweak it a little bit more, maybe two.
For the two alignment clubs?
No, no, no. Peel's fine.
Yep.
I like where
So Peel's one more marquee player for West Coast.
For West Coast, yep. And then, you know, so like a Brady Gray type, someone who's fallen out of the AFL system that they can bring on board, give their young players some guidance. And then if that's not enough, then we go up another one. And hopefully in 3 or 4 years' time we get it right.
Thank you for the email, guys. We've had two questions so far and it's taken us 13 minutes. So probably time for one more. Fantastic work so far and we'll save the rest for Thursday. I'll go to that one in 1 second. Okay, this one. Given the 12-day concussion rule, this is from Thomas Johns, is in place and that potentially puts a player out for 2 games, what are the panel's thoughts on a player who caused the concussion, let's say if malicious, also sitting out for the same period? One would say they'd probably get rubbed out anyway, but what do you guys think about that, whether it's intentional, reckless, or whatever, that a player has to sit out that causes the concussion as well?
I don't mind it. It's been raised in the past. There's also the argument that that player should sit out one of his weeks the next time they play that team.
Yeah, look, most...
Just could be back. A grand final, by the way.
Yeah, true. But the other point you make, it's quite valid, is that most times if there's a concussion involved with a contact at the moment, that player is rubbed out more times than not as it stands, just given the new head rules that are in place.
Not all the time.
Well, if I make contact with your head through shoulder, even an accidental head clash, most times there's a matter of your eyes looking
at. By the way, and I don't want to string it out any longer, but we talk about Zach Merritt at the weekend. How did he even recover? How did Mumford Neck get looked at the week before for that, the knee in the back?
The drop knee.
Should have been.
How did that not even get looked at?
He's very
clumsy.
Conveniently clumsy.
A third of his size. I don't like that. Do not like that at all.
Mummy does a bit of that.
Yeah.
It is hard though. It is hard going back to the question about to try and replicate the time out for the
player. I think it's too hard to do.
Yeah.
I like the idea in essence. But socialism's a good idea too.
In theory.
That's right.
Just doesn't work.
No.
It's a bit like Animal Farm in here, isn't it? Final one for the day. Mitch from Perth, and this goes back to bit of our question before with Freo, and we will get to everyone else on Thursday because everyone has to get out here. Why do West Coast in the last decade or so have a better record trading players? When you think of Elliot Yeoge, Redden, Cripps, they all came from other clubs and have become very successful players at West Coast. Well, then you look at the interstate players that have come back to Perth in Hogan Lobb, Wilson Acres, which players haven't exactly delivered on their potential return on investment. Whether or not there's ankle injuries as well with Hamling and stuff. Why is it that the two teams have such a difference? Is it purely luck or is it something else?
So you've got to be careful when you assess trades, you've got to be careful that you don't revisit the sins of the team on individuals. Like, has Nathan Wilson been – Nathan Wilson hasn't been great, but has he been poor? He's probably been okay, hasn't he? Hogan's a disastrous trade. Cam McCarthy's a bad trade. Harley Bennell – is a bad trade. All the rest of Fremantle's trades are players they expected to be C graders or at best B graders to give them depth and give them numbers, and the reality is that's what they've been. Jamie Cripps, have to say, Jamie Cripps is an all-time great trade for West Coast.
And going back to recruits, go back, say, 2 years ago, we were all saying, does Fremantle get Tim Kelly? Does West Coast get Tim Kelly? Breaking it down into why Kelly chose West Coast, and I've asked a lot of people questions about this, and, you know, when behind the scenes the Eagles are doing deals to make sure that Tim Kelly's accommodated with...
Yeah, I think that we're a Punda Foundation. I think played a role in that.
All that, and also, let's not discount the fact that he's thinking, Tim Kelly, premierships. And that's at that point in the last 3 or 4 years, let's be honest, that's where West Coast have been. In that window, Fremantle, not so much. So West Coast, let's be honest, they still have more pull around town in terms of if there's a line ball decision between a really good player.
It's a destination club.
Absolutely. For a WA player coming home.
Elliot Yeo is a big miss for Freo because Freo, Elliot Yeo was a Fremantle fan, family, massive Fremantle fans. I think he saw the resources available at the clubs. Like, I think when Elliot Yeo came here, he had a bit of a groin issue. West Coast rolled out the 5-star medical team and he looked at it and he went, okay, this is where I'm coming. And great decision. Elliot Yeo would be pretty handy at Fremantle. But, like, if Elliot Yeo had gone to Fremantle, maybe the 2015 season looks a bit different.
Just quickly on that, Jamie Cripps, I was quite interested in that. Jamie Cripps, taken 24th in the 2010 draft by St Kilda, and then was traded to West Coast with Brant Collett.
Brant College.
For Brodie Murdoch and Josh Saunders. So that's what they gave up. Picks 40 and 43 for Jamie Cripps.
West Coast, win.
Who's now played 186 games and 16 of those were with St Kilda.
Gun player, Jamie Cripps, and a very underrated and often understated member of the West Coast forward line. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday to try and tip you a winner for round 10 of the AFL season. We've been brought to you, as always, by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call the Gambler's Helpline on 1800 858 858 for any difficulties.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week? Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on The Game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.